Soul mate.
He mocks me. He mocks God. Such things are sacred.
To who? Your God may love soulmates, but man does not. Such a couple is vulnerable, particularly if they are fool enough to let the world see how shiny and happy they are. Their risk rises tenfold during times of war. There are two courses a couple in such circumstances can chart. Go deep into the country and hide as far from humanity as possible, hoping like hell nobody finds them, because the world will tear them apart.
He is wrong. He knows nothing of soulmates. Still, I cannot help but ask. The other.
Sink up to their necks in the stench and filth and corruption of their war-torn existence.
You mean behave like common criminals? Would you prefer us ruthless animals? Why are you doing this?
I mean, look at it, Katerina. See things for what they are. Drop your blinders and raise the sewer to eye level. Admit you're swimming in shit. If you don't acknowledge the turd hurtling down the drain towards you, you can't dodge it. You have to face every challenge together, because the world will tear you apart.
You are manipulative, cynical, and base.
Guilty as charged.
Life is not as you see it. You don't know anything about love.
I am intimately acquainted with the vagaries of fate in times of war. They've been my worst and best centuries.
That is not love.
I didn't say it was.
He flashes a smile, white teeth gleaming in shadow.
I prefer war. The colors run more brilliant. Food and drink are more rare, and the sweeter for it. People are so much more interesting, more alive.
And more dead, I say sharply. We lost nearly half the world, and you find it interesting. You are a pig, barbaric and cruel. I turn away. I have had enough. If this is his price, then I am free to go. There is nothing more I owe him. He has already taken it all. I move for the door.
You must tell him, Katerina, if you are to have any hope at all.
I stop. He cannot know. There is no way that he could know. Tell who what?
Sean. About Cruz. You must tell him.
I whirl, hand flutter into my throat. What in God's name are you talking about? I search his eyes, and I see there that somehow he knows my deepest shame. They hold a secret smile and a certain amused resignation, as if he has watched humanity's idiocies play out in front of him so many times that they have begun to not pain, but perhaps perturb him, as if he wearies of watching the rats in the maze run into the same walls over and over. I expand my empath gift. I push with all I've got. And still, I can't even sense that he is in the room with me. There is nothing where he stands.
If you don't tell Sean that Cruz is fucking you while you sleep, it will destroy what you have with him more certainly than any job in my club could. That down there,
he points to Sean serving a drink to a pretty, nearly naked Seely,
is a bump in the road, a test of temptation and fidelity. If your Sean loves you, he will pass it with flying colors. Cruz is a test of your fucking soul.
I don't bother arguing with him. He knows. Somehow he knows. Perhaps he can read thoughts like I read emotions. It is a terrifying idea. Why can't I feel you?
Perhaps the lack is not mine. Perhaps it is within you.
No. Of this I am certain. There's something wrong with you. Again, he flashes that smile.
Or something right.
Perhaps I take the coward's way. Perhaps I take the honorable path. I cannot decide. My head is a muddle. But I give the tuxedo club wide berth and pull up the hood of my cloak. I do not confront my Sean as I leave. If he tells me, we will discuss it. If he does not, we will not. I tell myself I am respecting his boundaries, preserving his dignity. This is where he will be instead of in my bed in coming nights. The price of saving my Abby is a piece of my heart and the lion's share of my spine. That is what Riordan called due. My Sean will face temptation alone every night at Chester's, and I will face it alone at the Abbey in my bed. This is not a world I ever wanted to know. 29. In the White Room. One night when Mac and me were killing Unseelie back to back, she had a kind of meltdown and started crying and yelling while she sliced and diced. She said that she was going to send them all straight back to hell because they stole everything from her that mattered. She said she used to know her sister, everything about her, and that was where love was, in the knowing and sharing. But it turned out Alina had a boyfriend she'd never mentioned, and a whole other life she knew nothing about. And not only didn't Alina love her, her entire existence to date had been one great big fat lie. Her parents weren't her parents. Her sister probably wasn't her sister. Nobody was what they seemed. Not even her. In Rowan, a stash of journals chronicling her nasty, evil reign, I found Mac's sister's diary. I have over 400 journals locked away with the Grand Mistress's emblem emblazoned on dark green kidskin leather. She was 88 when she died, though she didn't look a day over 60. She had a face she'd been nibbling on for decades, locked in a vault beneath the abbey. I killed it when I found out about it. When I discovered Alina's diary, I tore out pages and got them to Mac on the sly, trying to make up for silence in her sister's voice and show her she'd meant everything in the world to Alina. "Why the feck are we here?" I say crossly. "I wouldn't even be thinking about Mac if we weren't." Christian's been sifting me around the city, helping me plaster my dailies on lampposts. I've been letting him touch my pinky finger to do it. He keeps trying to put his arms around me. His last sift deposited us catty-corner to Baron's books and baubles, with the street between us. I feel like puking. I ain't been here since the night Mac found out the truth about me. The night she baked me a cake, and painted my fingernails, and saved me from the Grey Woman, only to end up ready to kill me herself a few minutes later. In the middle of a ruined city, Baron's books and baubles stands untouched. I think a silent benediction. May it always. There's something about this place. As if its mere existence means the world will always have hope. I can't explain why I feel that way, but all the folks I know that have ever visited it, all the other she-seers, feel the same. There's something different, something extraordinary on this island, in this city, on this street, in this precise spot. It feels almost like, once, a very long ago time, something terrible nearly happened here at this longitude and latitude, and somebody put BB&B on the gash to keep the possibility from ever occurring again. As long as the walls stand and the place is manned, we're okay. A snicker, picturing it looking just like it does right here and now, in prehistoric times. It doesn't seem so improbable. To the left and right, the cobbled street is swept clean. There's no riot detritus outside Baron's establishment. No husks left from Shade's gorging. No trash. Planters line the cobbled street, and there are small plants trying to grow in them, valiantly fighting the uncommon chill. The entry to the tall, deep brick building is drenched in dark cherry and brass and polished to a high gloss. The place is old world and urbane as the dude himself, with pillars and wrought iron latticework, and a great big heavy door with fancy side lights, and a transom that I used to bang through, and sometimes I'd go in and out, just to hear the bell above the door tinkle. It sounded really cool and fast, Mo. Used to crack me up. A hand-painted shingle hangs perpendicular to the sidewalk, suspended by an elaborate brass pole bolted into the brick above the door alcove, swaying in a light breeze. Amber lights glow behind glass panes, tinged with a hint of green. It's all I can do not to go banging in that door, say, "Dude, what's up?" I'm never going to bang in that door again. "Get us out of here," I say crossly.
"Can't. This is where we need to be. And what the bloody hell is up with that?"
I look at him. He's looking up at the roof of BB&B, where dozens of enormous floodlights shine down into the street. I have to back up a few steps to see past them and see what he's seeing, because I'm so much shorter. I gape. "What the feck are Zeus doing here?" The entire roof of BB&B is covered with zombie-eaten wraiths. Hulk and anorexic vultures with creepily hunched bodies and a gaunt grimness that defies description. They huddle in their voluminous black robes, dusted with dirt and cobwebs, unmoving. Carrion eaters, packed shoulder to shoulder, they're as fixedly still as a death watch. I'm not sure I would have even noticed them if Christian hadn't pointed them out. They're not chittering, and it's somehow worse that they're silent. Why are they hanging out on Mac's roof like that?
How the fuck would I know? Sorry, lass. I mean, how would I know?
You can say fuck around me. Everybody does. And you'd know because you're on Sealy.
Not completely. Not yet, and not originally. That's a lot of nots. And just because the rest of the men in this city are pigs doesn't mean I am. There's another knot for you. I'm bloody well made of knots tonight. I'm not the monster being hunted either.
I'll give him a look. His eyes are wild. This is a dude on serious edge, teetering, arms pinwheeling. So what are we doing here? I try to bring some focus back to the conversation. He doesn't answer me. Just stalks off, straight toward the bookstore, and right when I'm about to freeze frame it out of there, because there's no way I'm going inside, even if nobody's home. He turns sharp and heads down the alley between BB&B and the neighboring dark zone.
If you want to stop the Hoarfrost King, you'll have to come with me, lass. I'm taking you to the Unseelie King's library. If there are answers to be had, they'll be found there.
The Unseelie King's library? Holy borrowing bibliophile! Let's book! I take one last look up at the zoos and freeze frame to catch up. If Mac's in the bookstore, she won't notice the blur that just passed her door. I shiver as I chase after him. It's feckin' cold tonight. I more than want to stop the Hoarfrost King. I've got to. It's getting downright frigid in Dublin, and I got a terrible feeling it's going to get a lot worse. When Christian pushes into the brick wall of the building catty-corner to the rear of BB&B, first left on the dark zone side, and disappears, I melt down in a fit of the giggles. I toss a rock at the spot where he vanished. It bounces off the brick and clatters to the cobblestone. I'm feeling 20 shades of Harry Potter's train station, especially when he pokes his head back out of the wall and says impatiently,
"Come on, lass. This is hardly my favorite place to be."
I approach the wall and study it, trying to decide if I'd be able to find the spot again without knowing exactly where it was. His head disappears. I wouldn't. I want to chalk a big X on it, in case I need it again. But that would betray its location to everyone else, too, being as X marks the spot and all. So I back up partway down the alley and lock the scene down on the mental grid, permanent-like. I got that kind of memory. If I deliberately file something, I can always find it again. Hard part is remembering to deliberately file it. I'm usually so excited by the life I'm living, I forget to take pictures. Then I follow him in. Dude! I step into a brick wall. It's the freakiest thing I've ever felt. Like, it's a sponge, and I'm a sponge, and for a second there, all our sponge parts are one. And I don't just have square pants. Everything about me is squarish, because I'm part of a wall. Then I'm me again, and the wall kind of squirts me out on the other side in a completely white room. White floor, white ceiling, white walls. Inside the white room are 10 mirrors. Just like that, standing there in thin air. You can circle all the way around them. Nothing is holding them up that I can see. They're all different sizes and shapes, in different frames. Some of the glass surfaces are dark as pitch, and you can't see a thing. Others swirl with silver fog, but the things that move in their cloudy shadows are too fast and strange to define.
Good,
he says.
They're where I left them.
Where else would they be?
They used to hang on the wall. I shoveled them around so if anyone else knew where they went, they'd lose track. Used to be the one we're taking was fourth from the left. Now it's second from the right.
I'll take one last look around. I don't know, maybe looking for tired starlings. But there aren't any. And push into the mirror behind him. I get all spongy again. And this time it's like I passed through a lot of things, And just when I'm starting to get a little tense about it, wondering if all my parts are definitely going to come back together, I squirt out into Christian's back. Oof! What are you doing, standing there blocking the mirror?
Hush! I thought I heard something.
I perk up my super hearing. I don't hear nothing, and I can hear everything.
There are things in here,
he says.
You never know what you might find.
Bad things?
Depends on your definition, and who you are. Being a prince has its advantages.
I look around. Where are we?
The White Mansion.
Duh, like I might never have figured that out. I say, because we're in yet another white room. Is the whole place this boring? Don't the Fae ever use paint? Maybe a little wallpaper? He chimes softly. Dude, you're ringing like a bell. He stops abruptly, and I realize he was laughing. I'm beginning to understand how to interact social-like with an unseelie prince.
The White Mansion isn't boring, lass. Never boring. It's the grand domain the unseelie king built for his concubine. It's a living, breathing love story. Testament to the brightest passion that ever burned between our races. You can follow the scenes through if you've time enough and are willing to risk getting lost for a few centuries.
I heard of the White Mansion from eavesdropping, but never paid much attention to the talk. I was always more interested in the she's to do. What do you mean you can follow the scenes through?
Their residue is still here. They loved so intensely that moments of their life have been etched into the very fabric of the mansion. Some say the king designed it that way, so if one day he lost her, he could come live with her residue. Some say the mansion was built of memory tissue and is a living creature, with a great brain and heart hidden somewhere in the house. I've no wish to believe it's true, because that would mean the White Mansion can be killed, and she must never die. The record of the greatest love in the history of history would be lost, along with countless artifacts from myriad universes that could never be collected together again. This place is home, love story, and museum all in one.
So, where's the library?
You see, lass?
He says tenderly, like I never even just opened my mouth. Like I'm looking for a lesson in love, and I ain't.
The unseelie king fell in love with a mortal woman. She was his reason for being. His every defining moment occurred because of her. And only in her presence did he know peace. She was his brightest shining star. She made him a better man. And to men who know how fundamentally and deeply they're flawed, such a woman is irresistible. The idea that she would live less than a single century was more than he could bear. So he resolved to make her fae like himself, that they might live forever together. While he worked in his laboratory, trying to perfect the song of making, he needed to keep her safe and alive. He knew it might take him eons to learn to wield the power of creation.
If he was human, I might call that funny glint in Christian's iridescent eyes speculative, as it rests on me. I can't look too long trying to decide, because one short lock with his gaze and my eyes are already leaking blood. Dude's getting more potent by the minute. And weirder. Like, he's thinking him and me are like the unseelie king and his concubine. Some kind of star-crossed lovers. And where did you say the library was?
He built his beloved a playground of infinite proportions, tucked away in a safe pocket of reality where she could stay for all time, unchanging. Unaging. She would be safe. Nothing and no one could ever hurt her. He would never have to worry that he might lose her.
His voice sinks to a whisper, as if he's forgotten I'm even here.
They would be together, always. Soulmates. He would never be alone. Never get lost in madness, for she would never fail to find him and bring him back.
Dude, your story's fascinating and all, but where's the library? Time's wasting. We got the Hoarfrost King to stop.
If you stayed here, Danny, my light of love, you'd never die. I'd never have to worry about anyone hurting you. Ever.
Yeah, and I'd like be 14 forever. I'd kind of like to grow a few more inches, I say irritably. In more than a few places. He tries to keep me here out of some lunatic thought that I'm his queen, We'll be staining this place with a whole new residue. It'll be war in the White Mansion.
I'd forgotten that.
He sighs.
Come, lass. Shall we go find the library?
Dude, thought you'd never ask. We exit the white room on white marble floors and enter a sparkling white hallway with floor-to-ceiling windows that stretch to domed ceilings 40 feet high. There I see my first residue. Beyond tall windows is a beautiful woman in a snowy garden, silken folds of a blood-red gown spilling over a white marble bench. Face pressed into her hands, she weeps.
It's the king's concubine,
he says. I thought you said they were crazy in love. Why is she crying?
She wearied of being alone while the king labored at his experiments. She waited hundreds of thousands of years for him, alone except for those few creatures he trusted with her, and his occasional visits.
Christian tells me the rest of the story, while we twist and turn down hallways and corridors. I'm riveted in spite of myself. Who'd have ever thought such fantastical places existed side by side with our world, accessible through hidden portals and mirrors? My life is so feckin' interesting, I almost can't stand it. We pass over lemon marble floors and sunny wings, with tall windows that frame brilliant summer days, down rose quartz floors that reflect violet hues of the sunset beyond, across bronze tiles that wind through rooms that have no windows, only stately, enormous kingly chairs and couches and beds. There are fireplaces here as tall as a small house, with ceilings higher than the spires on cathedrals. How big is this place?
Some say it goes on forever, that the king created a house that constantly grows itself.
How do you find anything?
Ugh, and there's the rob, lass. It's difficult. Things move. It doesn't help that the king created decoys to better protect his dangerous journals. He seeded multiple libraries within the house. Behrens thinks he found the true repository. He didn't. I saw the books he pilfered. They came from the king's green study.
How do you know where the true library is? He hesitates.
Something in it calls to me,
he says finally.
I was trapped for a while in the king's boudoir, and I could feel the pull of the house beyond it. The residue in his chambers was so strong that reality and illusion blurred for a time. Sometimes I would hear whispers as I fell asleep. And those times, I would dream I was the king, walking my halls. I knew where everything was, as if it was I who'd fashioned this house. I even understood how things shifted. A few of those memories remain. Others aren't so trustworthy. Still, I know that down a crimson hall that will always be found off a bronze corridor is a music room with thousands of instruments that play themselves when you twist a key inside the door, like a giant music box. I know there is a vast arena in the cobalt wing with no gravity, and stars painted all around, where sometimes he took his beloved and created universes in the air for her amusement. And I know that because he feared other Fae would find the journals he kept, filled with notes about his experiments, he brought them into the White Mansion. It is said that he locked away the recipe for every Unseelie he ever created, and countless more unborn, that he chiseled a warning above the entry when he left. It is by that inscription you can know it's the true library.
What does it say? He stops.
See for yourself, lass.
I look up, and up some more. We're standing outside doors that are nearly identical to those in our abbey, at the entrance to the chamber where Cruce is trapped. Alien symbols glow with eerie blue-black fire, chiseled into the stone all around the doors, with much larger symbols carved across the arch. I can't read it. It's not in English. Christian moves from side to side of the archway, pressing various symbols, and after a moment, the doors swing open silently.
It says, read them and weep. Come, lass, we've a needle in a haystack to find.
The king's library is the craziest place I've ever seen. Christian disappears the second we're in the door. Me, I stand in the doorway, catching flies in my open mouth. The view seems to go on forever, between jagged, zigzagging bookcases, dwindling to a tiny black point that seems miles away. I step inside, fascinated. Despite how ginormous the doors are, I can spread my arms wide as they go, and my fingertips brush the walls of books on both sides. Lined with shelves and cubbyholes and built-in desktops that drop down on invisible hinges and are covered with more books and jars and knick-knacks, every horizontal surface perches at skewed, absurd angles that defy physics. The things on those shelves shouldn't be staying on them. The bookcases lean in and close over me in places, which means the books should be falling on my head. The walls soar to a ceiling beyond my line of vision. It's like being at the bottom of a jagged chasm of books, and there are millions of them in all colors, shapes, and sizes. Here, the passage between the shelves widens to 20 feet. There, it narrows barely wide enough for me to turn sideways and force myself through. I munch candy bar after candy bar as I move deeper into the nutty place. There are bookshelves that branch off, perpendicular to the main passageway, with only an inch of space between them. Nobody could even get a book off some of these, I say irritably. How are we supposed to search?
A fake hood.
His voice floats down from somewhere above me. I guess he's sifting up and down the shelves. I pass through a low-hanging doorway, the top of which is a shelf of upside-down books. They should be dropping on my head as I walk under them. There's a bronze plaque on the ceiling near them, I suppose saying what that section is, but I can't read the language. I reach up and pluck one from the shelf. I have to tug, like the book is set in glue or something, and it comes off with a wet pop. The pale green cover is soft and mossy, and the book smells like the woods after a spring rain. I open it and realize it was pointless to bring me here. I can't read a word. It's all in some other language, and I have no idea what it is. I don't think even Joe could translate this stuff. I'm about to close it when the sentence at the top of the page gets up and starts crawling across the page like a centipede. I snicker until it pauses at the edge of the page, like it's psyching itself up for something, then flings itself off the book with a mighty leap and starts wriggling up my arm. I jerk back my hand to shake it off, but it digs in by pointy letters and holds on. I pinch the sentence's butt with my other hand and tug it from my skin like a leech, smack it back on the page and clamp the book shut. Part of it's hanging out, and it waves jerkily at me with what appears to be blatant hostility. I stick the book back on the upside-down shelf over my head, pissed off sentence first, counting on the gluey base to hold it in. All I need is a badly mangled irate sentence stalking me. I open the next one I pull down more cautiously. Same thing happens, only this time a whole paragraph leaps off the page the sec I open it, and lands on my stomach. I swipe at it, but the words are sticky like cobwebs, and I only succeed in smearing them around on my shirt. Then they all start to separate, and I spend the next few minutes trying to catch them all and put them back in the book. But every time I open it, something else gets out.
You aren't messing with the Bora Bora books, are you, Danny?
Christian says from somewhere far away.
You're awfully quiet down there.
What are the Bora Bora books?
The ones where the words crawl off the pages. They're named after their homeworld. Nothing works like it's supposed to there.
He makes a sound that is suspiciously like a choked laugh.
You have to watch out. They sting like fire ants if they get pissed.
Ow! You could have told me sooner. No sooner did he say the word sting than they started doing it. I swat at them with the book they're supposed to be in. They scurry under a pile of teetering manuscripts and disappear. I sigh, hoping they weren't a critical part that someone comes looking for in a few hundred years, and stick the tome back up on its upside-down shelf. So, not all of the words are self-propelled like that?
Some of the books are just books. Bloody few, though.
Found anything up there?
Not yet.
Dude, I can't read a thing. I'm useless here. I wait, but there's no reply. I squint up at the ceiling. He could be anywhere, sifting from shelf to shelf. When he said he was taking me to the Unseelie King's library, I expected something like the one we got at the Abbey. Even if I could read whatever languages the Unseelie King's books are written in, it would take an eternity to search this place. not to mention a couple of gazillion foot ladders. It was stupid to come here. I don't regret it, though, because now I know how to get in the White Mansion. Dude, what a perfect place to hide out for a while if I need to. And there's so much to explore. Who knows what kinds of useful things I might find in here? I wander the passage between shelves, periodically calling for Christian. He doesn't answer. Books are piled in haphazard stacks along the sides, and I have to be careful not to bump into them. I get the feeling that if I knock over a stack, and half a dozen come open at once, not even my speedy freeze framing will be able to keep up with all that comes out. I open a few more books along the way, curiosity and me being best buds and all. One puffs out acrid smoke the sec I lift the cover, making me sneeze, and I slam it shut again. Another has fat brown spiders with hairy legs that spring from the pages. I squash the ones that make it out. Yet another has videos instead of words, but the images are so alien I can't make sense of them. I find a little mini laboratory amid the stacks, covered with petri-like dishes, and stoppered bottles and jars. Christian! I call again as I study the contents visible through thick wavy glass. I get a reply this time, but it's so far away I can't make it out. Dude, unless you're finding something, this is a total waste of time. I'd rather be back in Dublin investigating.
Hang on, lass,
comes his faraway reply.
I think I'm onto something.
One of the stoppered bottles has a dab of crimson at the bottom. I pick it up and turn it in my hand, watching the crimson liquid ripple. Rainbow colors skitter across the surface in kaleidoscopic designs. It's so beautiful, I almost can't take my eyes off it. I turn the bottle upside down and study the label on the bottom. No clue what the glyph-like symbols mean. As I turn the bottle back upright, I must have nudged the stopper a little because I get a whiff of the scent of its contents. And it's like sticking your nose right up into heaven. It's night jasmine and fresh-baked bread, homemade fish and chips and salt air. It's the smell of my mum's neck, fresh-washed PJs, and sunshine on dancer's skin. It's the scent of all my favorite things rolled up into one. I swear, my hair lifts on the breeze of it. I groan and pull out a candy bar, abruptly ravenous. There's curiosity, and there's cats. You'd think I'd learn. I'll unplug the bottle while I chew. 30. In the court of the Crimson King. Scratch that. In the court of the hag.
What the hell is that smell?
Christian says. Feckin' awesome, isn't it? I say dreamily. Crimson smoke swirls in the glass bottle, poking tentative tendrils at the rim. The amazing aroma fills the library, making me giddy. I want to stretch out, fold my arms behind my head, be lazy and bask in the fragrance. I want to share it with Dancer. I've never smelled anything so scrumptious.
Bloody fucking noxious,
he says from much nearer than he's been in a while. How can you say that?
Because it is.
Crimson strands puff from the bottle and swirl above it. After a moment, they begin to dart toward each other, circle around and dart back, slender red strands knitting themselves into a smoky shape. Dude, it smells like heaven. There's something wrong with your nose. Maybe you only like unseelie smells now. I can't wait to see what awesome thing comes out of this.
It smells,
he says from directly above me.
Like rotting intestines. What did you open, a book?
He drops down beside me, carrying a stack of books beneath his arm. I'm glad to see you found something.
A bottle? Christ, lass, you can't be randomly unplugging bottles in this place. Give me that. I'll see what you've done.
The hint of a face is forming in the crimson smoke. Delicate, pointy chin, enormous eyes slanted up at the corners. I try to turn my head to look at Christian, but my head isn't taking orders. It's stuck, still staring at the materializing face. I can't force myself to look away no matter how hard I try. It's got me mesmerized. I've never seen a face so beautiful, smelled a smell so good. I want to stand in the middle of it and breathe it deep into my lungs. When he plucks the bottle from my hand, the spell is broken. When he turns it on its side to read the label on the bottom, a cloud of crimson smoke gushes out, obscuring the passageway between the shelves. Tendrils lick at me, rough as tiny cat tongues. Suddenly, everything changes. Now that I'm no longer holding the bottle, I can smell what he smelled. Saliva floods my mouth, my stomach heaves, and I just about puke the candy bars I just ate. The face in the smoke isn't so beautiful anymore. It's morphing into something monstrous before my eyes. Long fangs slide from thin lips. Bloody hair writhes like snakes. Dude, what effect did I open? I say aghast. The bottle clatters to the floor. My blood goes cold when Christian utters a single word.
Run!
There are a few absolute no-brainer rules in my world. Real close to the top of the list is, if an unseelie prince runs from it, I'm going to run from it too. I'm not even going to ask any questions. I'm just going to vamoose with all my might. Still, I can't help but try to steal a peek over my shoulder. I'm the one that let it out. I have to know what it is so I can hunt it down and kill it.
Don't look back!
Christian roars. I cradle my head with my arms, trying to hold my skull together until the instant headache subsides. Stop yelling at me and sift us, dude! I'm freeze-framing, trying to keep up with him, but I don't know these halls. They're a maze that isn't on any of my maps. I have to keep dropping down, lock my grid into place, and kick back up again. The stench of rotten meat behind me is getting stronger. The skin on the back of my neck is crawling. I keep waiting for whatever is chasing us to close icy talons on my nape, rip my head off my shoulders, and kill me. All those scary movies I watched with Dancer aren't making me laugh now. They're filling my head with a million gruesome deaths, each more horrible than the last. It'd help if I knew what was chasing us. The unknown is always scarier than the known. I got a mega-sized imagination, and it can do a real number on me.
Sifting doesn't work inside the White Mansion. Take my hand, I know these halls.
I grab his hand, ignoring the groaning sound he makes. He laces his fingers with mine, and I'm blasted by a wave of horniness. Mute it, Christian. This ain't the time to go death by sex fae on me.
Sorry, lass. It's just that it's your hand and there's danger, and danger always.
Off it, now! I can breathe again. Not that I want to. The stench is suffocating and closing in on us fast. What's chasing us?
Loosely translated, the Crimson Hag.
How does it kill?
Hope you never find out.
Could it kill even you, an unseelie prince?
She prefers us alive. She once held two princes captive for nearly 100,000 years before the king stopped her. Among other foul things, she tried to breed with us. I had no idea he'd stored her in his library. Everybody figured he destroyed the bitch.
Why would she take you captive?
Because we're immortal, and once she takes what she wants from us, our bodies grow it back. Then she takes it again. We're a never-ending supply. She can just keep us chained up, sit and knit.
Knit? The idea of an unseelie monster knitting is more than I can wrap my brain around. What does she want from you? A cloud of red smoke slithers over my shoulder. Hurry, Christian! We've got to go faster! Get us out of here! We barrel down bronze halls, twist and turn through lemon wings, until finally we skid onto white marble. I swear I can feel the hag breathing down my neck. Then we're in the white room, rushing into the mirror, and I can't help myself. I look back as I turn all spongy. The Crimson Hag is the most revolting creature I've ever seen. Worse than the Grey Woman. Worse than the Unseelie Princess. Worse even than Papa Roach. And I have a special hatred for roaches. Roaches hang out on floors. My cage was on the floor. Bloody, matted hair frames an ice-white face with black holes for eyes. She licks crimson fangs when she sees me looking. But the truly disturbing thing about her is what she's wearing. Her upper body is voluptuous and encased in a corset of bone and sinew. She has no lower body that I can see. A tattered, incomplete crimson gown streams behind her. And now I know why she smells of rotten meat. Her unfinished gown is made of guts. My stomach heaves again. It collects on Seely Print's guts.
Among others, she'd take yours too, though yours would rot sooner.
Can't you go any faster? I like my guts. I want to keep them for a long time. We explode from the mirror into the second white room and leap head first into the next mirror. We pass through multiple mirrors, chased by the scent of rotting meat. Christian, she's going to get out.
Good. More prey in Dublin. She'll go after someone else.
We can't have her loose in my city.
You're the one that opened the bottle.
I screwed up. Big time. But I'll figure it out. I'll trap and kill her and make my city safe again. Before she hurts anyone. I can't stand the thought of innocent folks getting killed because of my stupid curiosity. You should have warned me not to open stuff.
I did. Then there was the whole read them and weep thing chiseled over the door. Which warning didn't you get?
That was about the books, not bottles.
Some warnings are unilateral.
Then we're out and the cold slams into me like the brick wall we just exploded from. It takes my breath away. And when I get it back, it comes out in frosty puffs on the air. I go skidding across the alley on snow and ice and crash into the building opposite. Christian slams into me. We steady each other, and I look around disbelievingly. The ground's covered with 6 inches of snow. Did the Hoarfrost King ice something in this alley in the few hours we were gone? It can't be more than 10 degrees, and the wind chill is killer. It never gets cold like this at night, and never over the space of a few hours. I look around for an ice sculpture nearby. Oh, crap, I say, because it's about to hit the fan. Snow's not the only thing in the alley. Royadon and Barons are behind BB&B, getting out of Barons' Bugatti Veyron. They both stare at me a sec, like they can't believe their eyes. Then Riordan's gaze fixes on where I'm holding Christian's hand. I drop it like a hot potato, but the look on his face doesn't improve. It's not what you think. He's not going to be my superhero boyfriend and kick your...
Yes, I am,
Christian says.
No, you're not,
Riordan says.
And where the fuck have you been? Do you know the problems you've caused me?
Dude, I've only been gone like 2 hours. And we got bigger problems right now, I say.
No shit. This whole city is turning to ice. What the bloody hell were you doing in the White Mansion?
Barons demands.
Who told you how to get in there? You will never go anywhere without me again,
Riordan says to me.
If you do, I'll lock you in my dungeon until you rot.
Speaking of rotting, I think...
No more. From this moment forward, I'm going to be doing all your thinking for you.
I bristle. My ass, you will.
Seal the wall,
he says to Barons.
And get her the fuck out of here. It's time for the Highlander to die. You just try,
Christian says. I ain't going nowhere. Well, I amend. Actually, I am, and you need to too. We all have to get out of here. I start trying to freeze frame, but I crash into Barons and bounce off. What happens next happens so fast I almost can't process it. The stench of rotten meat fills the air, and Christian and me duck and split off in opposite directions, because we know what's coming. Then the crimson hag explodes from the wall, holding what looks like 6-foot-long knitting needles made from bone, like lances at her sides. She pierces Barons and Riordan with them, then shoots straight up in the air, trailing their guts behind her. 31. I'm swimming in the smoke of bridges I have burned. I stand there like an idiot. I should run before she turns on me, too, but my feet seem to sprout icy roots. Barons and Riordan are lying in the alley on their backs, blood staining the snow in widening circles around them, and I gape. Thinking, they can't die. Superheroes don't die. Misguided beliefs aside, they sure look like they're dying to me. Nothing could get that mutilated and survive. The crimson hag didn't just puncture them. She flayed them from groin to neck and split them clean through bone. In one quick yank, she scrapped all their intestines and internal organs from their bodies. It's a move she's had hundreds of thousands of years to perfect. Puncture, fly, yank. Their chest and abdomen cavities are open and scraped empty. The only way the treacherous bitch could have done this to them was to catch them by surprise. What the fuck was I thinking, standing there saying anything besides run? Bickering as usual, like we had forever and always would. I thought you guys would duck at the last minute, I mutter at their bodies. Or freeze frame away faster than me. Or maybe Riordan would use whatever secret weapon he used against Velvet against her. Never in a gazillion years did I think anything could actually get the jump on them. But she exploded from the wall, and her lances were through them before any of us could even react. Their bodies are still moving, but I think it's just the final twitches the body makes when it gets traumatized so abruptly and completely. I hear a weird clicking sound that affects me the same way the zoo's chittering does. Terrifies me on a primitive level. Is she coming for me now? I grab my sword and whirl. It takes me a second to spot her. I follow the trail of blood. Up. The crimson hag is perched on the roof of the building behind B&B, with ropes of entrails dangling over the side in long glistening strands, dripping on the sidewalk. The bony needles she used to flay Barons and Riordan are actually her legs, which bend weirdly, sort of like a praying mantis's front legs, and have curved hooks on the ends. With insect-like appendages, she's knitting their guts into the hem of her dress. As her bony legs click and clack together, the guts sway over the edge, shortening inch by inch, smearing blood up the brick. It's so disturbing that my stomach heaves and my body tries to burst into tears and puke at the same time. I swallow it all and choke. I hear a guttural sound, followed by a weak sigh, and look back at the bodies.
I'm going to kill the kid,
Baron says faintly. Riordan makes a burbling sound like a bloody laugh. I don't think he even has the parts left to laugh with.
Get in line.
They both deflate and go still. I stare dumbly. They die like superheroes, cracking a joke, like they're just going to get up tomorrow and fight another day. No fear. Balls to the wall until the bloody end. I feel like somebody ripped my guts out too. I can't stand to look at them anymore, so I drop my head and squinch my eyes up tight. My head's a muddle. How did I get here? How did deciding to go to the Unseelie King's library end up with Riordan and Barons dead? I can't make sense of it. I mean, I can, because, duh, I can follow the chain of events, but who the fuck could have foreseen such a bizarre and preposterous outcome? How am I supposed to make small decisions when they can have such large, unforeseeable results?
Well, that was fortuitous.
Christian skirts their bodies and moves toward me, laughing.
Two down, seven to go. I wonder if we can just point the bitch at the rest of them. Mac, too.
My head whips up. He's laughing. They died and he's laughing. I start to shake. Stay away from me.
What did I do, lass?
You took me in there. That's what you did. You didn't warn me enough. I'm only 14. I don't know everything. I can't know everything. You're older. You're supposed to warn me about stuff. And now you act like it's good that they're dead.
I thought you wanted Riordan out of the picture.
I just wanted him to leave me alone. And I never wanted Barons to die. Oh, crap. Mac, I wail. I look at the back of the bookstore, now even more miserable than before. Mac's in there. How long before she comes out and finds Barons in the alley, bled out in the snow? How long before she discovers my complicity in this, too? I can see her, finding him, flinging herself over his body, weeping. One more tragic loss in her life. Because I opened a feckin' bottle. Because I was curious. The night Alina died, I felt like I wasn't really there. I never been able to shake the feeling there was something wrong with me. I searched Rose's journals from beginning to end, but she never wrote a single second word about me. Never. Makes me think maybe she had other journals I ain't found yet. But tonight, I'm all here. I suffer that unpleasant shift I felt once before, the night I got Joe stuck working in the club. The one where I move sideways into a different way of being me. See myself different. And I don't like it. It's the shift where I'm a boat, and there are all kinds of people capsized in my wake. No, not a boat. What did Riordan say I was? A tsunami, that's it. Crashing into things and leveling them. When he said that, he had no idea he'd be one of those things I leveled. Or that he wouldn't live to see the one hell of a woman I'm going to become. Above my head, bony needles clack away. I hear the wet slap of intestines against the wall as they're drawn up the side. I should be terrified. I should be running for my life so she doesn't do to me what she did to them. Should I hide their bodies so Mac won't find them and figure out what I did?
Come, lass. We have to get out of here while she's busy. The hag gets obsessed with her knitting, but she'll be done soon.
Christian says. My legs are made of cement, and I have concrete blocks for feet. I just keep looking from Barron's and Riordan to the bookstore and back. First Alina, now Barron's. There isn't going to be any place on the face of this planet Mac won't hunt me down when she finds out what happened here tonight. I look at Riordan. How can he be dead? Who's going to run Chester's? Who's going to keep the loser Fay and humans in line? With both Barron's and Riordan gone, is there any safe place in Dublin? Will B&B and Chester's get abandoned? A hand closes on my shoulder, and I just about jump out of my skin.
We've got to get out of here, Danny. She's finishing up.
I shake him off violently. Don't you ever touch me again, Christian McKelter! He exhales sharp and sudden, like I punched him in the gut.
You don't mean that.
Try me. I fist my hand around the hilt of my sword.
I'm the one that gave it back to you, lass. I'm the one that watches out for you.
You're the one that took me somewhere I didn't know was as dangerous as it was. Folks got killed because of it. Did you at least manage to bring out the books you found?
I had other things on my mind. You were in danger.
It was all for nothing. The books got dropped, forgotten. I look at the wall. Sure, I could go back in, but I can't read any of the stuff in the library, so what's the point? And who knows what else I might set free by opening anything else in there? I look up. Blood drips down the side of the building. As the gruesome hag knits away, she plucks a small bone from the mess of entrails and organs and tucks it into her corset, taking a moment to rearrange her obscenely human-looking breasts. Then she stops abruptly and looks down at me as if she's suddenly realized there's more prey in the alley and it's watching her. After a moment, she dismisses me and returns to her stitching. But I feel marked somehow, like she filed me away in her unseely insect brain. How do I kill her? Will my sword work?
Might, but you'd never get close enough. Her needles are longer than your sword. She'd have your guts in her dress before you even managed to swing it.
You said she gets obsessed while she's knitting.
Not that obsessed.
The ambiance in the back alley changes abruptly, and it takes me a minute to figure out why. A light just came on in the back of B&B and is spilling out the window across the blood-stained snow. I know what that means. Mac's moving around inside, looking for Barron's. I imagine it won't be long before she looks out back to see if his car's out there. If Mac walked out that door and tried to kill me right now, I'm not sure how well I'd fight. I take one last look at Barron's and Riordan. I have to make this right somehow. I have to balance the scales, and there's a lot weighing in against me. Come near me again, and I'll kill you, I say, soft like Riordan used to talk. I freeze frame into the night. 32. If I stay lucky, then my tongue will stay tied. I spend the next 2 days slapping up terse Danny dailies that describe the Crimson Hag and her M.O., hunting for Dancer, collecting the rest of the ziplocks I need from the other iced scenes, except for the club beneath Chester's, which I'm in no hurry to go near, and packing my backpack full of samples. They're some of the most miserable days of my life. I go up and down like a feckin' psychotic elevator, being controlled by some feckin' psychotic little kid, punching random floor buttons. 1 second I'm swaggering, the next I'm drooping. 1 minute I'm elated because I never have to go to work again. My life is my own. Jo can quit the sub club. She'll stop wearing sparkly stuff between her boobs and boinking Riordan. The next minute, I remember that if Riordan's remaining men learn that I played even one tiny little part in their boss's death, I'm deader than every doornail in Dublin. On top of that, the Crimson Hag is loose. The Hoarfrost King is still out there. Dublin is slowly turning into Ant-Feckin-Arctica. Christian and me are on the outs, and now Mac has double the reasons to kill me, assuming she knows. I can't decide if she knows. 1 minute I think she does, the next I don't. The bodies are gone. I went back in the middle of the night to hide them. I should have hidden them right away, but I wasn't thinking clear. Aside from blood in the alley and up the brick wall, no trace of them remained. At first I thought Mac must have found and taken them somewhere for a proper burial, but then I decided she didn't, because yesterday I saw her hurrying down the street toward Chester's, all bundled up and shivering in the cold, and she didn't look sad. I've seen Mac sad. I know what it looks like. She looked a little tense, but otherwise normal. She had a trail of zoos behind her, chittering away. I wonder if, like crows, the zoos are harbingers of death. It worries me they're following Mac. Her tension is probably because of what's happening to Dublin. Everybody I'm seeing is tense, and shivering. It's 10 degrees in Dublin during the day, even colder at night. Snow's been falling, piling up. The city isn't set up to handle this kind of weather. Lots of folks don't have power where they're staying. They won't survive these conditions long. I wonder if the Crimson Hag ate Berens's and Riordan's bodies, stitched up their entrails, then dined on the rest. I'd think she'd have spit up a few bones, but maybe she needed them all to spruce up her corset. Then I figured Christian probably went back to tidy up and hide the evidence, trying to get on the good side again or something. I wonder where the heck Dancer is. I need his super brain to help me crunch the facts so I can save my city from turning into an iceberg. So then I can save folks from getting knitted up into a dress. I got 2 more places to check for him, then I'm out of places to hunt. I freeze frame up O'Connell, yanking We Care posters off street lamps as I go. Stupid feckers are trying to take advantage of people not having power, encouraging them to come into prayer meetings to get warm and take the white. I didn't know what that meant till I saw a couple folks coming out of one of the churches the We Care people have designated as their own, wearing long white robes over their clothes. They were carrying bags of